What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Blogging Theology. Today, I'm delighted to talk again to Dr. Abdullah Sweedy. You must welcome, sir. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam, Abdullah. Thank you very much for having me.
Great to have you back on. For those who don't know, Dr. Abdullah is a Swedish convert to Islam who holds a PhD in Islamic theology and is a specialist in topics related to atheism. He has been teaching in Al Masjid al-Nawawi and the Islamic University in Medina and has been active in teaching Islam in Sweden for over 15 years. Now, several months ago on Blogging Theology, we heard a fascinating presentation on artificial intelligence and Islamic ethics by Professor Mohammed Ghali, who spoke about AI on a metaphysical and ethical level. Today, however, Dr. Abdullah will focus on how AI will have an impact on our society, especially on us as Muslims, and how we can take benefit from AI when it comes to dawah and education and the media. So over to you, Sheikh.
Bismillah, wassalatu wassalam, wa rasulillah, wa alihi wa sahbihi wa ma'ala, amma ba'd. First of all, thank you very much for having me here. It's a great honor always to be here. And I will start with my presentation, inshallah. Yeah, embracing AI, a new horizon for Muslims. Before I start to talk about the subject, I want to talk about my journey to AI and why I became interested in AI. So I started off with traditional Islamic studies in Medina, in the university, and also with scholars and so on. And usually the traditional Islamic studies are, like you can say, the traditional in their way. You start to memorize, you sit with scholars in a mosque and so on. And it's not much technology there. It's very interesting. It's very beneficial. You learn about your religion and so on. But at the same time, I can feel that it's not the best way to reach out to the broader public in the world. If you want to reach out to all human beings in the world, the traditional way of teaching Islam is good for Muslims that want to study and want to learn and are interested in studies and so on, but it's not the best way to reach out to a broader public. I continue to study. Took my PhD in atheism, and I wrote about atheism in Islamic University. And a big part of the studies in my PhD essay was about science and religion, and how you look at science and religion and the intersections and so on, because atheists sometimes they say that science goes against religion and so on. So I became very interested in the subject about science and religion and technology and religion and so on. And then I started to study religious studies in the West, and these secular studies are more based on the human being, the human religious person, and how society and psychological factors has impact on him to be religious, and how it changes society with religion and so on. So I started to become more and more interested on these kind of factors, on how to have an impact on people and how we can reach out and understanding the psychology behind people becoming religious, leaving religion, and so on. And also started another subject in the university called History of Thought. And this is based on the study of history of science and history of technology, and how the progress in science have an effect on how people look at the world, and also how it changes it, how new ideologies and so on come up based on new technology and new science and the changes in society in general. So I became very, very interested in this subject in general. And then when the whole AI boom came, especially with generative AI, I saw some Islamic centers that were very keen to use AI in Dawah, to spread Dawah. And they were very successful. So I saw that when they started to make Dawah through the internet and using AI, they had a possibility to reach out to hundreds of thousands of people, and thousands of people converted to Islam that way. So This made me, very, very interested in how we can use AI. We as Muslims, we have the Islamic knowledge. We have the things that we can learn from scholars, from books and so on. How can we reach out to our fellow human beings with the message of Islam, and how can we teach Islam in new ways and so on? So I wrote an article or report together with some other brothers in Arabic called Mustaqbal al-Iman wal-Qiyam fi Dawr Tatawwurat al-Dhaka' al-Ijtimai. That was about 1 year ago. The future of faith and values in the light of the progress of AI. So I started to read more and more about the subject, on the effects of AI on society, and also how we as Muslims can take benefit from AI to spread the message of Islam to as many people as possible. So what we can see right now, you can talk about AI in the light of Islam in many different ways. So we had the great presentation of Professor Muhammad Ghali about AI, and he was addressing the metaphysical or theological questions about AI, how to look at AI, what is AI? Is it, can we say that it's an animal? Is it like a human, or is it what is called Jamada?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Is it like more like a stone, or what is it? And other questions that are more ethical questions. So I will not speak about that subject today. I will speak about how AI and technology in general has an effect on us and on society and on religion. And also how we can benefit from AI in spreading the message of Islam and educate others in Islam. Mm-hmm. So many scholars today, they speak about AI as the fourth industrial revolution, or it's a part of the fourth industrial revolution. So the first industrial revolution that happened was from 1784, or in the end of the 18th century, with mechanical production equipment and the steam engine and so on, which actually began in the UK, and then it spread to rest of Europe, and it came to USA and so on. And then the second industrial revolution was with electricity and the trains and so on. And then the internet came in the late 60s. Which was also...
Was it in the 60s that it came? Gosh, I didn't realize it was such a long time ago.
Yeah, it was the first industrial revolution. The third industrial revolution started that in 1969 with automated production and so on. And then internet started to get rolled up after that. So I don't really know when internet exactly started. But they say that the Industrial Revolution itself, and internet was a part of the Industrial Revolution, started in 1969. Mm-hmm. So now the fourth Industrial Revolution is highly based on AI. So combining humans and machines and internet and so on. And this revolution is in many ways much faster, and it might also be bigger than the other industrial revolutions. So this revolution that is occurring right now is huge in many, many ways. And what is interesting is to see that the former industrial revolutions had a huge impact on society. And this is probably what will happen today also with the AI revolution, or the fourth industrial revolution. So we can see that what happened with the first and the second industrial revolution, that we saw the impact on society, like urbanization, people moved from the countryside and started to live in cities. Also individualism, when people moved out from their villages, they used to live together and used to live with their families and so on. They moved into cities and people became much more started to live much more by themselves and so on. This is what we can see in many ways in industrialized societies, and it's a big difference between them and between other societies. Mm. Also colonialism, because when the Industrial Revolution happened, these countries became much stronger and more developed when it came to technology and weapons and military and so on. So they had the ability to colonize other countries, even though colonization started before that. If we see the maps, like in the before the Industrial Revolution and after, how much they could take over just because they had the ability to do it militarily and with weapons and so on.
Yeah, you see in some maps in the past,
if you look at the extent of British control over the world, is traditionally coloured pink. So you could see which parts of the globe were controlled by the UK. And apparently a quarter of the Earth's surface was at one point controlled from London, basically, because of this reason. Yeah,
and it was like, if you see at UK as a country, it's a very small country, and the population, if you look at the general population on Earth, it's a small population. But at the same time, they were able to control much of the Earth. Why were they able? Okay, there were many reasons of that, but one of the main reasons was that it was more industrialized and more technological advanced, so it had impact. Also, migration. Why did people move? Now we can see that people move from what is called third world countries to other countries. It's usually because they are more industrialized and they have more money and it's more possibilities when it comes to work and so on. So it has impact on society, and also wars. Because if we look at First World War and Second World War and how many people were killed during those wars, one of the reasons was they were able to kill more people than people were before. So they could kill more people. When they invented an atomic bomb, they could kill 100,000 persons in one day or in just a couple of minutes. And that was not, they were not able of that before. So it has an impact on society. And it also has impact on ideologies. So you can see, like, socialism, it grew up from the industrialization, people moving out from the countryside, living in very harsh conditions, working in factories and so on. And this was one of the reasons why people turned to socialism, that socialists said that they care about the poor and so on. And also liberal democracy. Why did liberal democracy become so dominant in the world? One of the main reasons was that they had the power to enforce it on other countries. They had the military might, they had the economic might and so on, which is an effect of the Industrial Revolution. Also nationalism, the different countries started to brag what they had invented, and the whole pride of what they could make and so on came out of the Industrial Revolution. Also, we can see now in the fourth Industrial Revolution, populism, that you can spread, like you saw the elections 2016 in USA and so on. They were able to spread Donald Trump's message and making him popular and so on in many ways through the digital era, and also in the use of AI with analyzing people, and they had the whole Cambridge Analytica and so on. So spread of many of these ideologies that we see today can be spread through the new technologies that we have today. We can also see that the Industrial Revolution has had a great impact on religion. We see the decline usually of traditional religion or traditional religious movements. So in many countries, the official church, or even like that we can see in some Muslim countries, like more Sufi-oriented shuyukh in the villages and so on, they lose their popularity because they are not really coping up to the new developments that are happening, and many other reasons too. But we can see that when people are moving out from the villages and people are moving into the cities and so on, it leads to a form of decline of traditional religion, but at the same time, we can see a rise of new religious movements. So in many countries, we can see that, like in the States, evangelical churches have been very, very, they have risen a lot in many countries and been successful in spreading their form of Christianity. And we can see that the traditional churches or the older churches are not able to cope up with the new changes that we can see. And usually these smaller churches or the smaller Islamic organization or the less established organizations, they are usually more dynamic when it comes to using new technology to reach out. And this is also what we can see with populist movements. So usually these far-right political movements and so on, they are usually very good at using the new technology, using the internet, reaching out to people in a new way. When we can see the traditional parties, they are trying to use mass media and so on, and people are losing trust in mass media. So this leads to new structures of ideologies and religious movements and so on in society. And also the spread of religion. This is also one of the things that we can see now. So Islam is spreading right now all over the world in a way that was impossible before. So using the internet, using YouTube, using blogging theology to reach out to people.
Because of what's happening in Gaza, many people in the very young people in the West are seeing the extraordinary faith that Muslims have under the most extreme circumstances. And they're asking, why are these people, do they have such solid faith? And they're reading the Quran and they're TikToking about it. And so, and it's almost like a revival. It's extraordinary. And all because of social media, really. And what I'm actually seeing things for the first time as a world. We're seeing atrocities and war crimes being committed on a daily basis. And we no longer trust our leaders to tell us the truth or to not respond to these atrocities on the grounds that, hey, you know, it's nothing to do with us or something. So
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's changing everything. I think it's an historic period we're living through.
Yeah. So this leads us to the importance of trying to cope up with the new technologies, because we can see in the history that those who did not do that usually led to decline of their ideologies or their religious movements and so on. But trying to cope up and to use the new technologies to reach out to people is extremely important to reach out with the message of Islam. Mm. So we have to take lessons from history. Also, another thing that is very interesting, that Professor Mohammed Ghali spoke about that, but this is also something I want to mention it too. The historical stages of human communication, we can also see that in the Islamic history. So it started with the oral era, and all of these stages are still used. So you still use the oral way of reaching out to people in the written era and so on, but it had an impact on the opportunities to reach out to people. So the oral era, which also happened in Islam in the beginning, they spread hadith from mouth to mouth and so on. It has benefits that you can meet the teacher and you can also take what is called tarbiyah from him. You can, he can nurture you, he can teach you, you can take benefit from him as a person and so on. It's a more personalized relationship with the teacher. But you can't reach out to so many people if you only use the oral world before the digital era. So you can only speak to the people that are around you. You can't speak to people in other places on earth and reaching out to them and so on. So you have to write down books. So writing down books had a huge effect on spreading the Islamic message to other countries and also spreading madhahib inside of Islam and so on. And then when the printing era came, it changed, because in the written era, reading books was more like a thing for the elite. So usually those who could read were a few people that could read. And usually you had a few books that you read many times. Mm. And during the printing era, it was possible to print very many books and to reach out to a broader population. And more people started to read, so you could reach out to more people with more books. But usually people, when they read the books, they don't read them at the same way as they used to read them before. So you have, like in the Islamic tradition, that you memorize books and then you sit down with a scholar and you study the book and really, really try to understand it. Now it's more like you read through the book and you go to the next book and the next book and the next book and so on. But it's possible to reach out to new people. So there are benefits of the new way, but there are also benefits with the new way. And then came the mass media era, where you can reach out to people through television, you can reach out to people through newspapers and so on. And if we look at the printing era and the mass media era, we can see that Muslims were not they fell behind in many ways. So Muslims came after when it comes to printing, the printing books and so on. It was hundreds of years after when the Muslims started to print books in Arabic. And this led to a decline in science and in technology and so on in the Muslim world, and also mass media era. We can see that the narrative that had been spread through Western media, when they owned the narrative, it led to a decline for Muslims. They could spread misinformation about Islam and Islamophobia and all these kind of things, because Muslims were not controlling the narrative. Because they had the mass media, and Muslims usually did not have the mass media or the possibility to reach out in the same way as Western media had. But then came the digital era, which made it what is called more democratized. So you can have blogging theology. You don't need millions of dollars to start like a big corporation, media corporation. You can have your own YouTube channel, and you can reach out to more people in some videos that you have than some media corporations that have maybe billions of dollars. And this is something new, and it also led to possibilities for Muslims to reach out to people in a way that was not possible 30 years ago, 40 years ago, and so on. And this is what we can see like now with the Gaza conflict, the war or the atrocities that we see in Gaza now, that Muslims have a possibility to reach out with their narrative, and also what kind of effects it has on the population in the West or in other countries as well.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I can see, it's not just the Muslim narrative, it's the human narrative of the appalling war crimes that are taking place. It has influenced most people on the planet, I think. I don't get any sense that the alternative, without mentioning it, is somehow, you know, gaining traction or attracting most people. I get the sense the opposite, that the incredible suffering and injustice that's happening to the Palestinian people in Gaza and in the West Bank and other places is the forefront of people's mind, that they're aware that it's even affecting the White House now and other Western centers of power, who are kind of giving verbal assent or lip service, some might say, to stopping this, although still supplying arms, of course, at the same time. So we get this, but nevertheless, that kind of thing is now on everyone's minds, and it's center face, and we can't avoid it, and it's everywhere. It's remarkable.
Yeah, and it's been going on for 75 years. So many people, like in the West right now, they are surprised to hear about the history, not only what's happening right now, the whole history, because they did not know it before. But now, through the digital era, it's possible to reach out to people in a whole new way. And now we come to the AI era, because now it's possible to reach out to people even more in a way that was not even we're not able to do it in the digital era. So this is what we'll come to. And now we'll come to the big question, okay, what is AI? So especially what we're talking about right now is generative AI. So I'll try to explain it. We have artificial intelligence, which is the general umbrella term, and that's theory and methods to build machines that think and act like humans. This is like a broad concept, and you have many different types of artificial intelligences. And the whole idea of artificial intelligence started in the 50s. So it's an old idea. It started with the first computers. So it's an old idea. And there have been some research since long time back, but the reason everyone is talking about AI now is, I'll talk about later, is the generative AI. And then you have something that is called machine learning, which started in the 80s, and that's the ability for computers to learn from experience of data without human programming. So the computer can distinguish things and can... Like when you get an email, you get spam emails, and they put it straight away. They can know, the computer can know what is spam and what is the kind of emails.
They're supposed to know. They're not always very good at it, but
yeah, of course.
Spam in case some good stuff ends up there, and it often does. But I know what you mean.
Yeah. So this is machine learning, and then you have another thing that is a sub. A field of machine learning called deep learning. And this is the scientists and researchers are trying to mimic the human brain on how the human brain works. Mm. And it leads to possibilities to generate new information. So you have the old machine learning where you get the spam mail and so on, and can distinguish this from that and so on. But now you have the possibility to generate new information, new text, new videos, new images, and so on. And this is the latest technology that you have in AI. So generative AI, that we have ChatGPT 3.5 and 4 and Gemini and these new programs, they're all very new, even though the idea of artificial intelligence is much older and the whole concept of artificial intelligence is much broader than we have right now. And I will focus, inshallah ta'ala, on generative AI, because this is the thing that most Muslims can use. So you have some parts of AI that can be used for automated cars and making new weapons and so on. But these are the kind of things that the general Muslim will not take any benefit from, because he cannot produce anything. But generative AI, you can sign up for ChatGPT for $20 a month, ChatGPT 4. And then you can have all of the possibilities that you can use AI for, or Gemini Advanced and so on. You can make use of them, even if you don't have some money, you don't have a corporation and so on. But there are huge benefits that the common man can take benefit from. And what we can see now is the rise of AI, rise in research of AI. There have been research about AI since the 50s, but now we can see a huge rise in AI in the last years. And also there's a huge investments going on in AI companies. So they have much more fundings, the computers are much better now, and they have the kind of resources they need to make new programs and so on. And this is also very important to understand when it comes to AI, because when we speak about something that is not possible today to do with AI, maybe in just 6 months it will be possible, or just 1 year and so on, because now it's a boom of AI and it's new programs coming out all of the time and so on. And you can use generative AI to program new programs. And this is one of the things that leads to this boom. So you use the AI for new programs, and that will lead to new programs and so on. So they say that AI will have a huge impact on economy, about $15 trillion to 2030. That's just 6 years, 6 years. And it will especially be huge in China and North America, and in some way also in Europe, but especially in China and North America. And the reason for that is that if you want to make good AI, you need a lot of data. You need a lot of information. And in China, they have the whole system that they have with surveillance and surveilling everything that you when you pay with money and with cameras and so on. So they have so much information that they can use, and they can program their programs with. So it's possible for them to develop. And also the government there is supporting a lot of the AI companies and making it easy for them to develop and so on. And in North America, you have the same thing, that you have all these huge companies, the big tech companies, that have all of this information. Just think about the information that Google has and the information that Meta, Facebook, Instagram, they have all this information. So it's easier for them to develop. But we see that Europe lags behind, and also many other countries lags behind when it comes to AI. So it will be a big gap, or what they call the AI divide, between different countries. Those who cope up with the AI transformation or the revolution now, and those who do not do that. So this is what they speak about now, the AI divide. the artificial intelligence divide refers to the growing disparities between individuals, communities, and nations in their access to, development of, and benefits from artificial intelligence technologies. This divide mirrors and often amplifies existing social and economic inequalities. And it's very interesting in this definition, they mention three things: individuals, communities, and nations. So individuals that start to use AI will have a lot of more possibilities. They can be more efficient in work. They can do more things than people who don't use AI. And communities, organizations, also the Muslim community, if we as a Muslim community start to use AI, it will lead to a development in many things. And if we don't use it, we will lag behind. And also when it comes to nations, so the nations that are developed when it comes to the AI and use AI, they will become much richer. And those who come after will become even poorer. So it's sad to see the future that many people in many countries will lead to a lot of unemployment, and it will lead to greater economic inequalities between countries. But at the same time, it's very important that we as Muslims try to cope up with these things and try to follow the development, because the development is just going like this. So if we don't, we have to take lessons from what happened in the first industrial revolution, the second industrial revolution, because when Muslim was lagging behind, it led to colonialism and the ability for them to take over Muslim countries, and Muslim countries losing their political autonomy and so on. So it's very important that we see when this is the development right now, that we try to cope up with this and try to learn as much as possible and try to use it in a good way. Yeah. Do you have any questions or anything regarding
this? No, I'm still processing a great deal of what you're saying, actually. I hadn't appreciated this whole issue of the AI divide, actually, and the impact it would have between nations and communities. So that's a lot there to think about. But your previous slide, seeing China way out ahead in terms of its economic development because of this, that I hadn't appreciated. Far in excess of the United States.
Yeah. I'm currently listening to an audiobook about the war between USA and China when it comes to AI, and the author, who is an American himself, he's saying like China is excelling in almost every point, and one of the reasons is that the government in China is pushing in so much money in this issue because they have understood how important it will be. And one of the wake-up calls that he mentioned is that AI can play games. So it can play chess and it can play different games. And there's a similar game to chess in China that is much more complicated, that is called Go. And when AI won over the world champion in Go, it became a wake-up call for Chinese that, okay, if AI can win in Go, it's an old Chinese game. So if it can win and go, it means that we really have to go into it. So it's a quite...
I think China has the oldest continuous civilization in the world. I think it's been around like 4,000 millennia or something, 4,000 years. So that's remarkable. And of course, they actually invented printing originally. We think it was invented in Europe, but that was a particular kind of printing. But printing as such was invented in China. This whole idea of technological innovation, and maybe even paper was invented there, I'm not 100% sure, but they have a history of incredible innovation when it comes to technological advance. It's not just a new thing at all, it seems.
When it comes to technology in the light of Islam, I think it's very important that we as Muslims have the whole discussion on how to position ourselves when it comes to AI and new technology, because you can look at this issue in many different ways. One of the ways is that we look at the world as a test, and the purpose of life is to worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So a person who does not know any technology at all, and he's a righteous person, he's worshiping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he will come to paradise. So this is the most important things. If you look at materialistic ideologies, they can look at new technological advances as their paradise. So this is the most important thing that they can see, and they're thinking about how to make more money and so on. And we as Muslims have to have a more balanced view when it comes to looking at technology. It's not the most important thing. We have things that are more important. And also Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has warned us to get too attached to this dunya. So if you're only living for technology, only living with your mobile phone, only on social media and so on, and trying to gain riches, then this is something that is blameworthy in Islam, to only strive for all of these things.
Okay. Can I just pause you a couple of things? Because a couple of things, are just in case people are not aware, many people are not Muslims. When they hear about worshipping God, they think, well, they might think of what Christians do. So worship is when you worship God in church, say once a week on a Sunday. But that's not what Muslims mean, is it, by worship? It's a much broader category. And also, can you just define what dunya means as well, very briefly? So why is there a problem? What is this dunya that we should get too attached to?
Yeah, worship in Islam is everything that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala loves and is pleased with. So it can be praying and fasting and going to Hajj and so on, but it can also mean that you're good to your parents, to your neighbors, that you earn money in a halal way, that you spend money in a halal way, that you use science in a good way, and like a doctor going to his work and giving treatment to his patients. It's a form of worship if you have a good intention. But only striving after this worldly life, which is dunya, and trying to gain more riches and more materialistic things and bigger houses and bigger cars and so on, this is something that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has warned us against.
Right. Thanks.
At the same time, we can see that technology can be extremely helpful, but it can also be dangerous. So it can be very helpful in many ways. The whole society that we have today is in many ways based on new technology that can help us in many different ways. The way that we're recording this lecture now is based on technology, so it's very, very beneficial, but it can be dangerous also, like we saw with the nuclear weapons, that you can kill 100,000 persons in just 1 hour or just a couple of minutes by dropping a bomb and killing this huge amount of people, and many other things that we can see with technology, that it can be very helpful, but can also be dangerous. So it's important that we have an ethical framework, an Islamic ethical framework, how to look at technology, to have a, we can look at it in a positive way, but at the same time to be careful, to look at different kind of technologies in different ways. So some technologies can be very good, and some technology can be dangerous, and so on. But it's very important to have this kind of discussion about technology in general, but especially now we come to something that is so new as AI. And this is something that I think that we don't see so much amongst Muslims today. We can see some scholar articles about AI and ethical, the ethical framework of Muslims when it comes to AI and so on. But when we can see this huge revolution that's taking place right now, I think it's not enough. So we need to have more discussions about these subjects. And also technology can help us to worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We have apps on our phones now. We can know prayer times. We can know what the Qibla is. We can make it in our worship to come closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala every day. And it can also help us to spread Islam in a way that was almost impossible before. So I will talk about that later. We can see that most human beings today have access and use internet. So we have possibilities to reach out to people that were unthinkable that we can reach out to them before. So there are new possibilities to reach out with the message of Islam. And especially
also the danger, of course, of fake news just terrible things that have been circulated on the media. I won't go into that now, but it's a two-edged sword, isn't it? It's both positive and negative.
So it can be used to to worship Allah with prayer, and when it comes to Hajj, I think you talked about that with Professor Muhammad Ghali, that they're using artificial intelligence today with monitoring Hajj. So you can use it even in these kind of things, but it can also lead to Muslim countries that are more technologically advanced. We can see that they have more political autonomy, and they can abide to their own political agenda more than countries that don't have this kind of political autonomy. So when you always have to buy your technology and your things from other countries, you will become dependent on them. And if you are dependent on them, you will not only be dependent on when it comes to technology and economical funding and these kind of things, it will also have an effect when it comes to ideology and so on. So that Muslim countries are developed is extremely important for them to have a political autonomy, and also that they will not become that they make their own things, so they are not in need of others that can come with different conditions and come with different spreading their ideologies through technology. Because this is something that we can see today, that ideologies are spread with technology. And it's a way for especially the Western world that they say that we became so developed that we are today just because we have this liberal, secular democracy and so on. So it's a way for them to preach their ideology by showing the technological advances. So Muslim countries being developed, it's very important so they can stick to their faith and So AI can have a lot of applications in many different ways. It can have in medical, like making new drugs. You can also have AI doctors that you talk to an AI doctor that can give you descriptions of things that is developing very, very quickly. AI can make different forms of surgeries. You can have it in the military in many different ways. In manufacturing, in research, in finance. So AI is almost everywhere. But this is not the kind of AI that I will speak about today, because a common Muslim listening to this lecture, and he can hear that you can develop a lot of new weapons when it comes to AI, or you can use it in large factories to develop new cars and so on. It might not be something that he can take in. So I will speak more about generative AI that you can use in your daily life. So generative AI like ChatGPT and Gemini and Bing and these new applications that we have now that are based on deep learning, you can take advantage from them in many different ways. So you can write to it text, and it will produce text. And I will speak about all these things in detail after that. And you can write natural text, and it can produce codes in Python and programming and so on. You can write text, and it produce images. You can write text, and it produce videos. You can write text, and produce audio. You can put in an image, and it will analyze it and write it down as a text. And you can put in a video, and you can write it down as text, and audio, you can write it down as text. So all these things are things that you can take use of when it comes to AI, which can be very, very beneficial for Muslims and for humankind in general. So when it comes to text to text, you can use AI for brainstorming. So like when I made this this presentation, one of the things that I did was going back to ChatGPT and going back to Gemini, saying, okay, I will have a presentation. I will speak about AI. What kind of ideas could I have if I speak about how I can use AI text to text for Muslims? What kind of ideas do you give me? And so on. So it can give you new ideas, and you can brainstorm with it, and it can give you new insights into different subjects. It can be very good to answering questions too. So if you have a question You want to learn about AI. You want to know what's the difference between deep learning and machine learning. So AI can answer the question for you, and it can do it in different ways in accordance to your question. So if you say, I'm a data scientist and I have PhD in data science, so explain to me in a highly advanced way about the differences, and it will give you a very advanced answer. And then you can say, I don't know anything about computers at all, and I want to learn, so can you please tell me the difference in a very simple way between machine learning and deep learning? And it will give you, can you make an analogy between them and so on. So you can ask it different kinds of questions, and it can answer you the questions. It can be very good for analyzing texts too. So for an example, we have someone who is writing an article about Islam, and you want to refute the article. You can just take the text and you can put it into ChatGPT, and you say, I want you to analyze the text and take out all of the logical fallacies that you can find in the text. And it will take out all of the logical fallacies and will say, you can find this, 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 and this, and that in the text. And it will help you if you want to refute the text after that. So it's very good in analyzing texts in general. It can also be used in writing texts. So you can ask it to write a text. You want to write an article about something. So you give it a prompt. You write like maybe five or six sentences. You explain what you want exactly. I want to write an article about this and this and that. I want it to be an academic language. I want it to be in poetry. I want it to be a very beautiful language. I want it to be a simple language for children and so on. You say what you want from it, and it will write the text for you. It's good for summarization too. So you can take, you see an article, a scholarly article about AI, AI ethics. So you can just take the article through AI PDF, and you can load it up, and you say, I want a summarization of the whole article in 500 words. So it can summarize the whole article for you. It can help you to correct and rewrite a text. So you have a text that is highly academic, but you want to write it in a way that can be more, that can be easier for people to learn, to reach out to kids, to reach out to youths, and so on. So you can say, you can have the same text that you have written, and you can write it 500 times. You can ask it to rewrite it. And it can also correct the grammars. It can correct other things in the text. It's very good to translate, especially when it comes to English. So from Arabic to English, it can be very successful. And I have used it myself in many ways. I worked for an organization that used to translate a lot of their texts from Arabic to English. So they took the text and they just sent it to a company, and it costed them tens of thousands, like in Saudi riyals each year. But now, when they when we can use artificial intelligence, it's much quicker. It used to take them days to get the translation. Now it can just take an hour. You can just translate it, you check it through and so on, that the translation is good, and you have the whole text in another language. So it's good for translation. It's good to take out Q&A from text. So you have a text, you want to take out the Q&A, you're a teacher, you want to make a Q&A for kids and so on. It's very good to take out Q&A from the text itself. So you can take a whole book, you say, I want 100 questions and answers from that text, and it will take it out. So it's good in that way too.
Okay, there are tons of problems here that one could bring up. I'll just mention a couple of possible serious issues with this. Number two, answering questions. I bumped into a guy in Jordan, actually, back in August, who's a specialist in this area, and he was a Muslim, and he was quite concerned. He told me, if you were to ask ChatGPT, what is the Islamic perspective or Islamic position on LGBT, for example, a specific question. And he discovered that you'll get a range of answers. You'll get, well, there is the conservative view, then there's the progressive view. This word was used on ChatGPT, the progressive Islamic view, which is obviously very different from the normative Islamic view. In other words, you get a range of views, a range of opinions that you could possibly have in response to the question, what is the Islamic position on LGBT? And this is obviously very concerning because there isn't this range of views. There's just the normative Islamic view. And so, you know, this was part of the point of meeting up with this person as an informal gathering, is how we, in a sense, input or program ChatGPT to actually give correct answers and not just answers that are at home in a Californian kind of seminary, a California university setting, but actually do reflect the normative position. So that will be one problem, because often these answers reflect a Western liberal secular view and are not actually reflecting the normative positions of other faith communities. So that was one part. I won't go into the other one quite yet. What would be your response to that problem?
Yeah, of course, when it comes to asking it Islamic questions, so you can have different kinds of AI. The problem with ChatGPT itself is that it has been programmed with so much different kind of texts that you don't really know what kind of text is behind it when it comes to the Islamic touch on questions, yeah, and so on. So to ask it Islamic questions, I would not recommend that. But if you ask it about what is the difference between machine learning and AI, and you want to ask something about some scientific ideas and so on, then you will get good answers usually. So when it comes to the Islamic aspect, answering questions, then you have to be very careful because you're asking someone that you really don't know who's
going and to this ask is you. A big drawback, isn't it? This is a big drawback. It's not just a question of answering questions in a kind of simple way, but you could be buying into a worldview which is completely wrong. So we need an Islamic, maybe then we would need a Muslim/Islamic AI yes, center database that's not going to give completely wrong answers, that's fed by...
And that's possible. That's possible. So you can program, you can program, Dr. Mohammed Ghalib was speaking about that. The program that we have is called Shamila. Shamila has about 10,000 books, and some of the books are 30, 40 volumes. So you can program your own AI only based on the Islamic books, and it will only give answers based on the Islamic books, or you can make an Ibn Taymiyyah AI, so only Ibn Taymiyyah books, or only that scholar, and only Abu Hanifa, only, and so on. So you can make a Madhab Hanafi book if you, AI if you want. So these are the general programs, but based on these programs, or now we're able to make our own like artificial intelligence in different feeds. So when it comes to asking Islamic question to ChatGPT, then no, it's problematic in many different ways. Yeah.
Yeah, and I actually see a similar problem that if people think instead of going to a scholar for fatwa, you just go to AI, they're going to give me a fatwa. There's a disaster because it's not conscious. It's not a sentient being. It can't take into account the human dimension at all. On a lighter note, sorry, carry on.
This is one of the challenges, because you will probably see a lot of people that will start to use it in that way. So you can see someone who does not have any knowledge at all about Islam, and he will start to write Islamic texts. So there is a problem in that issue. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Now, on a lighter note, I'm quite looking forward, I haven't done this yet, is to test, say, ChatGPT and put in and ask it to summarize aspects of Kant's Critique of Pure Reason, for example. So can you explain to me what synthetic a priori concepts are to a child? I just have this as pure fun, because the Critique of Pure Reason is one of the most difficult books ever written in Western philosophy. Yeah. So I'd be interested to see if it can actually simplify this without losing the correct substance of it. So we're going to have a lot of fun with that, but that's a different subject. So
This is one thing that's quite interesting, because you have ChatGPT, which is from the company OpenAI, and you have the other one used to be called Bard, and now it's called Gemini from Google. And ChatGPT is based on a lot of more data than Gemini. But I asked Gemini, it came out just a couple of weeks ago, Gemini Advanced. So it's a new form of Gemini that you can use, and it only costs about $20. And I asked him, okay, what's the difference between you and ChatGPT? So it said that I have been based on peer-reviewed scholarly articles more, and like books. ChatGPT has taken needs a lot of information, so it took from blogs, it took from websites, and so on, just as much information as possible. So Gemini is more based on facts. This is what it said itself, but I don't really know. But more than ChatGPT. So yeah, but what we can understand is that we can use AI, and if we have Muslims that are good in programming, we can make our own AI for different purposes. Yeah,
but it's got to be the answer. Otherwise, we're just following a disaster, basically. Otherwise,
So another thing that is very interesting with AI, generative AI, is that you can produce code. So like, I am not an expert in programming, but I can write to these different programs, and I can say, I want a program, I want a website, I want an app, I want this and this and that, and I write in a natural language to it, and it makes codes in Python and in different programs based on it. So especially if you have some basics in programming, it will make things a lot easier. So I know one brother, he told me that he's a programmer. So he said that he was sitting down with his colleague in work, and they were trying to find a code, and they were sitting for hours and so on. And then they just went to a program, and just in 1 minute, they had the whole code. So it would be much easier to create websites, to make new programs, to make new apps, to make chatbots. You can make the chatbots to make discussions with non-Muslims and so on. So you can create new programs, and this is one of the reasons why we have this whole AI boom right now. You can create text from text to images. So yeah, this image on the mosque. I wrote to it, I want you to make an image of a mosque right next to a sea with a sunset. So it made this based on the text, the prompt that I wrote to it. And the other picture is because many Muslims, when they're making books for children and so on, if they don't paint the eyes and so on, you can make these kind of pictures very easily through ChatGPT and Midjourney and these others. So you can make children books, you can make pictures for websites, for social media, PowerPoint presentations, you can make logos and so on. And all of these things will just take you a couple of seconds. But if you really want to make it better, you go back and forth and so on, it might take you a couple of minutes, but you have good content for spreading on social media, spreading on websites and so on. So it become much easier to produce content and produce pictures and so on. I couldn't take it up. Okay. You can also use ChatGPT to make videos. So you can make whole new videos based, not ChatGPT, AI in general. So this is another web page called HeyGen. You can translate existing videos. So this video, we could make it in Chinese, we can make it in Korean, we can make it in Japanese. And if someone would look at my lips, it would seem that I am speaking in Japanese or speaking in Korean and in Spanish and so on. So we have the possibility right now to translate videos from scholars, from experts, from people making dawah and so on, and reach out to people that it would be impossible for us to reach out to them before. And you can even make videos based on avatars, so people that do not actually exist. So I can make an Islamic video in Chinese with a Chinese person speaking, so it seems like a Chinese person speaking. Or can I make a video with an African person or a person coming from Latin America or North America or Europe, anyway. So I can make new videos based on the text, the prompt that I give it. So this is also something that you can make with generative AI. You can also make audio. So you can transform books and articles to audio for personal use. So you have like an article. You don't have time to sit down to read it. You're going to go by your car. You're going to go on the bus and so on. You just want to listen to it. There are some websites, just upload it. You upload the text that you want, and you can just listen to it after that. So you can go through book after book after book. You can go through articles. You can go through different things. When you're busy with other things, with working at home and doing other things at home, it's very easy for it to translate text to audio. And also, that's a possibility for us to make new audiobooks for the public. So if we write a book now, we can also make it an audiobook. And the whole global audiobook market is rising a lot. So you can see in this picture how much it's rising. So we have now 2023 and how much is prospected to rise. So you have these different apps like BookBeat and Storytel and so on that we can listen to books. So it's a possibility for us as Muslims to make all of the books that we have and make them to audiobooks too, because some people, they prefer to listen more than they prefer to read. And you have people that are blind, so they can't even...
And in fact, historically, when it came to books, actually, most people actually used to hear them rather than read them, actually. People used to hear the Quran, they used to hear recitation of hadith, they used to hear the Bible read out. It wasn't actually people studying texts. Yeah,
exactly. And especially now when people are so busy, usually they're busy at home, they're busy going with their car and bus and so on. So it's a possibility for us to gain more knowledge and also to spread knowledge to others by reaching out through audiobooks. You can also take an image and make it to text. Mm. And this is very interesting when it comes to reading manuscripts. So you can take old manuscripts and you can make the AI that read the manuscript for you. So I don't know how advanced it is in Arabic now, but this picture is, I think it's some old Greek text or something like that. I think they're using it probably in Bible studies. And this text that we can see down here is from Ibn Taymiyyah, rahimahullah, who is famous that his handwriting was not that easy to read. So a lot of students or researchers that try to write down his books and so on, they have a lot of problems when it comes to that. So AI can be very beneficial in this. And I think we have a lot of books right now from scholars that have been written before that are still haven't been produced. So it will be a possibility for us to get in touch with this whole tradition that we have. And it's also a way for helping blind people. So a person who is blind, he can take a picture of something and it will become a text and it will be read up for him. So he's sitting in a room and someone is coming in, he's taking a picture and the whole thing that is happening for him will be explained for him. So it's something that will really revolutionize when it comes to blind people, inshallah. Also, it can be very good making video or audio to text. So you have this program called ChatTube. You can take a video, a long video, a podcast, and you put it in and you ask it for the content of that video. So you go into a podcast, 2 hours, 3 hours long. You just want to know if he spoke about that issue or that issue, and it will give you the information. And this is interesting because this is something that a Saudi brother sent to me. He doesn't know English. So he went in, he's writing an essay about the problem of evil. So he wanted to go back to other sources in English and so on. So he took this video and he asked it in Arabic and it translated for him in Arabic what it was speaking about. Wow. So there's a way of for Muslims, if they want to, if they don't know Arabic, they want to know what a scholar said and so on, so they can go in and they can get it transcribed in the language.
It's already happened for quite some time now with YouTube videos, because before one uploads a video on YouTube, YouTube will scan the video basically and to see if it's okay to have advertising on it or the other issues.
So that this technology has been used for some time. And of course, if there are problems, you know, then it will be flagged up, and you might not be able to post your video. So this kind of censorship and surveillance has been going on for some time.
Yeah, but it's a way of writing down lectures. So if you have a lecture, you have a video, you want it written down to make like a base for a book or something like that, it's much easier now to have it written down, inshallah. How can Muslims benefit from generative AI? So we can take benefit from it in many different ways when it comes to study and research, education and dawah and work and media. So first, when it comes to study and research, we want to study a specific subject, like you said, something about Kant and so on. You want to summarize complex sources and make it easier to understand. It can be very good for that purpose. To explain hard technical concepts, things that can be hard to understand. You can have a resource, you want a whole resource that can be explained for you. You can have things that are technically hard to understand. It's easier to understand it. It's good for brainstorming and idea generation. If you want to write a book, you want to write something, you want to study a specific subject, it's good for have this whole brainstorming and so on. It can help us to write better research also, and also when it comes to translation. So if you are a Muslim that don't know Arabic and you want to go back to Arabic sources, or a Muslim that speaks Arabic, we'll go back to English resources and so on, it's a possibility for us to gain knowledge from different languages when it comes to study, before even educating others. For us to learn more, it becomes much, much easier by using these different tools that we have right now to gain more knowledge about different things, different religions, different ideologies, technology, and so on. Also, when it comes to education, it can be very good to translate books. Of course,
I love your slides. Your slides are great, by the way. They're very interesting and very colourful and visually attractive and informative and so on. Thank you for the
information. Yeah, it was supposed to just go one and one, but yeah, it was not possible. So yeah, alhamdulillah. So we have the possibility now. Of course, when we translate a book from one language to another, you still need a human that can revise it. Because sometimes if you would translate a book in aqidah or like in a complex topic, it might be that the translation is not that good when it comes to specific wordings and so on. So you need a human that can revise it, but it can help you a lot. So you can just get the first outcast and so on. So it will be possible for us to translate a lot of books of the scholars, lectures of scholars. Like I said, you can translate a video. It can help us to write books and articles. Like I said, you can personalize the educational platforms, and you can personalize the books. So we have a lot of books that are written for Muslims that are in the academia. So we can make the books in an easier way. So we can try to reach out to a broader public of Muslims. We can make it to audiobooks, we can translate it and so on. So we can reach out to as many people as possible in a personalized way. And you have this app called Tartil also that is personalized, where you can read the Quran and it will help you and correct you if you're wrong. So you read the Quran and it will say, no, you made a mistake and so on. So you can have your own sheikh who can correct you if you haven't memorized correctly. It can be used also. I have a book here. This book was completely AI generated. So you have new books right now. I read some of them that are completely AI generated. Okay, of course, I wouldn't recommend to do that when it comes to Islamic books, but it can help us to write new books in new ways about Islam. It can be good to make virtual reality. So it can be a very interesting way to teach about Sira, for an example. So we have this example of a museum. They're using virtual reality, and it's like you went into the house of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, his old mosque and so on. Yeah. So this is a way that you can use virtual reality to reach out with a message, especially for young people, maybe for non-Muslims. They might not be so interested when it comes to the seerah if you just give them a book or a lecture. But if you present it through virtual reality and so on, it become much more interesting.
And this is something, by the way, the Dutch brother, Joram van Cleveren, has actually done. He has a business, a company that does precisely this. It's very successful in Holland. Yeah.
Mashallah, interesting. It can be good to create in curriculums and lesson plans. So I did it before this lecture. I wrote, I want to give a lecture now, lesson plan for teaching conditions of prayer in Islam. So we'll say the first 5 minutes, you make a presentation of this and this and that, and the second 5 minutes. So it gives you a whole lesson plan, two or three pages in just a minute. And it can be good for preparing for lesson plans where you're teaching and so on. Preparing lectures, it can be very good for helping you with that. Creating visual aids for education, like PowerPoint slides. By the way, this PowerPoint slides was not made by AI, but now Microsoft, they have what is called the Copilot. So all of the programs that they have in Office, Word and Excel and PowerPoint and so on, will have this AI generation generator. So you can just write, okay, I want a PowerPoint slide with seven different, like an infographic for seven things. And so on. It will do it for you. So it will be much easier for us to make PowerPoint presentations, because it takes time to make PowerPoint presentations.
Yeah.
One thing that is very interesting now when it comes to da'wah through AI is the outreach of internet and social media. So we can see now in what they call the developed world, 80% of the population use internet, and in other countries that are less developed, we have about 40%. So, and it's just rising. So in probably a couple of decades, most people all around the world will use internet. And now, like I spoke about, we have all these possibilities to generate content, to translate content, to reach out to them, and so on. So we have possibilities right now to reach out to almost all of the population in the world, so we can really revolutionize when it comes to da'wah, to reach out with the message of Islam to people all around the world. And you can see the numbers of people using social media. So in 2017, 2.7 billion, and in 2027, 5.8 billion. So just in 10 years, you can see how many new people are using social media. So we can reach out to them through YouTube, through Facebook, through Instagram, and so on. So some people, when they speak about social media, they speak about it, especially some Muslims, they speak about it in a negative way, the negative impact of social media. And it has many negative impact, but we can also see it as possibilities. So we have possibilities to reach out to Muslims and non-Muslims alike with the message of Islam or anything that we want to convey to them. So how can we use AI when it comes to da'wah? AI can be used to analyze trends on social media. So you can have an AI program that can analyze the content, what is being written about Islam on social media right now, what is being written about the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So you can see what kind of accounts that are writing about these issues, in which groups and so on. So you can go into different groups and you can know where you can try to reach out to them. You can create an audience-specific content. So by these analyzing the trends and analyzing the public and analyzing people and their comments and so on, you can try to create a content that is audience-specific. So a person that is really close to Islam is not like a person who is far away from Islam. A person who is young is not like a person who is old. A person who is Christian is not like a person who is atheist and so on. So it will be much easier to create an audience-specific content to reach out to the specific people that you want to reach out to. And this is something that, I spoke about in the beginning when I was speaking about religious studies in the West, it's more based on the human, what makes a person religious. Sometimes when I see Muslims who are trying to refute another religion, it's too, it can be too scripture based. So it's based on trying to refuting that scripture itself or some specific dogma. But the thing that we should focus more on is trying to reach out to the human itself. We want him to become a Muslim. And many humans themselves, they're not so much into these dogmatic beliefs, and they are on a very, very basic level. So what are the psychological factors we can understand from people so we can reach out to the humans with the message that we want? So I think this is very important when it comes to Dawah itself. I don't say it's wrong to focus on scripture. We need that kind of content too. But I say that if we want to reach out to the general public, it's very important to analyze these psychological factors and this the society itself and so on. And you can optimize your content for SEO, search engine optimization, so your content will become the first content on Google when people search on a specific issue. Your content will always be the first or the second or the third and so on. AI can be used for optimizing content for SEO. It can also be used for programming chatbots that I spoke about before. You have some organizations that are now, they have a lot of discussions between Muslims and non-Muslims. So you have the discussions, they have collected hundreds of thousands of discussions. And you can see based on the answers and the impact of the answer. So if you answered a specific question, they ask about a specific thing about the Quran, when you gave that specific answer, it had more impact on those specific people. So you have people that are older, this answer is better for them, and this answer is better for them, and so on. So based on all of these discussions, you can program the chatbots that it can help you with da'wah on non-Muslims, or on Muslims too, if you want to reach out to Muslims that are not so practicing religion. You can reach out to people by programming Dawah chatbots. It can be very good to countering misinformation about Islam with bots. So people that are spreading misinformation about Islam are using bots. So they are using optimized accounts that are spreading lies about Islam and so on. And people, when they see a lot of comments on a video or on a social media and so on, they might feel most of the comments are negative. It has an impact on how you look at that specific tweet. So if you write a tweet now on your account on Twitter, and then 100 comments comes after that, and they're all speaking badly about you, speaking badly about you, oh, you don't understand anything and so on, it will lead many people, when they look at your tweet, it will lead them to look at it in a different way. So it can, you can use, you can also program bots to counter this kind of misinformation, or to spread automize accounts to spread Islam, to make retweets and so on. So this is also a way to reach out to other people with automized accounts. You can also craft images that are highly captivating for onlookers. So if you spread just a tweet by itself, it might not reach out to many people. But if you make a good image also that people look at, and it's something that catch their eyes, you have the whole no design thing that you're using yourself, it makes people look at the content more than just a tweet. And you can use AI for creating this kind of images that people will look at, so you can reach out to them. Also, multilingual outreach in text and videos that I've been speaking about a lot of times. It's a great possibility for us to reach out with the message of Islam to all kinds of languages. And also extracting logical fallacies from anti-Islamic content. Like I mentioned before, you take an article that has been written in Daily Telegraph or in Daily Mail or something like that. You take the article, you want to refute it, you can just take out the logical fallacies or other things from it that you can use for refuting that specific article. So it can be good in counting misinformation about Islam too. Another thing that is very interesting when it comes to AI is when it comes to work possibilities. So the labor market will change a lot. A lot of jobs will be automated. So a lot of people working today with specific jobs will not work with those specific jobs in the future. It does not mean that they will be unemployed. They might work in other fields in the same company. They might learn new AI techniques so they can use it. But what many scholars say, or many researchers say, is that people who use AI will have a lot of more possibilities on the job market. So they say that generative AI in job market will rise a lot. And this gives new opportunities for those Muslims who seek to, I mentioned two different ways. You have a lot of Muslims living in countries with high unemployment. So in the country itself, if you just go to the job market, you will not find any work. But if you learn generative AI, it's possible for them to have to work from the net. So you can work in through different websites and so on. You can even have a better salary than maybe doctors have in your own country and so on, because the salaries are quite low in these countries and so on. So it gains possibilities for people living in countries to work from distance and from abroad and gain money, but they're still living in the countries. So they don't need to go to other countries and live in other countries, leave their families and so on to work over there. And it's also great opportunities for Muslims that want to make, that lives in the West, that want to make hijrah. So a lot of Muslims, they want to make hijrah. They want to go to a Muslim country, live there. And one of the main things that I'm thinking about is, how can I earn money? So if I go to that specific Muslim country and they have a high unemployment rate, even their own population don't have work, so how can I find work? So now, by learning generative AI and learning these different techniques, it will be possible for you to work at distance. You can work, you can live in a Muslim country, but you work for another country, because these are from the possibilities that you have through AI. So it can give us new opportunities, even though it can also lead to job losses. The last thing that I will mention here is media. We know that media has a huge impact in shaping people's understanding of the world, and it also had a huge impact on spreading Islamophobia. So if we can just look at the impact that Orientalists had on the general population and the impact that mass media had, usually Orientalists that wrote the books about Islam and so on, they reach out to people in the academia only. Most people did not read the books of these Orientalists. But the main way that people look at Islam and the main thoughts that they have about Islam is from media. So media has a huge impact on shaping people's understanding of the world and also spreading Islamophobia. And Muslims have been lacking behind when it comes to the control of traditional mass media. But now what we can see in these pictures, that people are losing trust in mass media a lot. So we can see Americans losing trust in mass media. It's about 40% that have of the Republicans, specifically, but also Democrats, they have no trust almost at all in mass media. And very few have a lot of trust in the, and so on. So people are losing trust in traditional mass media. And especially the younger generation, they're taking their media content from social media, the news content from social media. And this is what we saw with the whole the genocide that is happening in Gaza, that the older population in America specifically, many of them are still with Israel. They're taking the news from the mass media corporations and so on. But the younger generation, especially those who are in TikTok, they had a total different view of the whole genocide and the whole conflict that is happening over there. And this is part of the losing of trust in mass media and the alternative media that comes up right now. And this is a possibility for us to reach out with people with media too. And especially the generative AI that I said, it gives incredible possibilities to analyze news, translating news. You can take news from different websites, and you can translate it, and you can create new content and so on. So you can run your own news websites in a much easier way. You don't need the kind of funding that you used to need before. So you can start your own website very quickly. You can start your own social media accounts. You can spread news, and you can be a resource for many people when it comes to media in a way that was not possible before. So it's a huge possibility for us to see this trend that we have right now with people in the West losing, especially the younger generation, losing the trust in mass media, to come up with alternative media and take benefit from AI in generating good content and good news, inshallah ta'ala, to reach out to people.
I just think sorry to interrupt. Can I just go back to that slide that you were at a moment ago? Looking at Americans' trust in mass media all-time low, just looking at that particular none-at-all category in kind of orange at the bottom there, perhaps in 1975, maybe it's a couple of percent had no trust at all in the mainstream mass media. Now the figure has leaped to, I think it says 39%.
Yeah, and for the report, so the orange is, I think it's, no, it might not be that. Okay. It was another statistic that I had about Republicans and Democrats. So Republicans, more than Republicans are not trusting, but this seems to be another statistic, yeah.
Yeah, so 39% is and that trajectory continues, and there's no reason to think it wouldn't. If you look over the decades, then it's soon going to be half the American population having no trust at all in mainstream media. And this is remarkable because traditionally that's where people got them, you know, they got the CNN, NBC, New York Times, whatever. But now that's extraordinary statistic alone, gobsmacking. It's just a collapse in confidence in the West, in the media, basically, in the mainstream traditional media. Is one of the most remarkable revolutions in our time, I think. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, by the way.
Yeah. I think it's a way because we can see that it has an impact. So people now, the younger generation, they did not just change their mind when it comes to Gaza. Many of them even converted to Islam after that because this has been a barrier for them. It has been a barrier. The news, the media has been a barrier for them to accept the message of Islam. So now we have a possibility to reach out with people, changing the media content and also changing the da'wah content because we need both of them. So you can make how much da'wah you want, but if the media is still controlling how people look at Islam, it will be very, very hard. You will have all of these barriers between you and them to reach out to them. So you can see in many countries, you can see Muslims going there making da'wah. You can see people are converting by the hundreds because they have not been brainwashed before. But in the West especially, if you're speaking to older people and they have been brainwashed for tens of years about Islam and they took their information in this way, it's very hard. So now we have a way also to change the media narrative, inshallah ta'ala, by using AI.
Yeah, thank you.
The last thing, there are many challenges when it comes to AI for Muslims. We have some theological concerns with some things regarding AI, especially when it comes to what's called artificial general intelligence and how to look at AI, what it is. Is it always good? What kind of stance that we should take when it comes to some aspects of AI? There are also some Muslims, they have a traditionalistic stance to new technology. So they favor old things. So they always speak in words like it was better before, even when it comes to some things, worldly things. So I think it's very important that we change our ways of looking at technology, that it can be used in a very good way. And I think it's a lack also of ethical discussions between Muslims on when you can use AI in different things, if you write books, if you use it for research and so on. We need more discussions on the use of AI and when it can be good and not when it cannot be good. So we need more discussions about the subject. There are technical and socioeconomic challenges that we can see right now with in some countries they don't have the possibility to use internet, or internet is very slow, or you don't have enough knowledge to how to use internet and so on. So to reach out to a broader public of Muslims, there's a need of change there. And also one of the challenges is the milieu where most AI is programmed, what you mentioned about it's in California, and they have all of this. It's not only liberals and libertarians, many of them. And I even read a book mentioning that many of them have this hippie background, and they're very, very liberal in many ways. And they are those responsible for programming many of the main AI programs that we have today. And this will influence in many ways the main programs that we have. So we need more Muslims that are working with programming, and we need our own programs. So we need a discussion on many levels, and we need more Muslims getting involved in this and more Muslims working with AI so we can have our own programs and we are not only using other programs from others that have an other ideological background than us and so on. So there are many challenges, and I hope that, inshallah, this subject will be discussed more on Blogging Theology and other places, and that this might be an eye-opener for Muslims to use AI in a creative and good way, inshallah ta'ala, for these different purposes, inshallah.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you so much indeed. That's an outstanding presentation, I think. Really interesting and encouraging, actually. It wasn't all doom and gloom at all, how we can take advantage of these emerging AI technologies. And I, for one, am certainly going to look into some of these things that you mentioned in the video. I'm going to sort of put a plug for a certain way that's probably dying out completely now. I mean, a long time ago, before any of this existed, in my teens and in my 20s, I read a number of books, and I like reading deeply into books. I have this analogy in my mind of a mine shaft digging deep to the treasure under the earth. And so I read big fat tomes written by academics on, say, New Testament studies or philosophy and so on. And these were hard books. And I had this thing in my mind, rightly or wrongly, that I would read every word, every footnote, because I really wanted to squeeze the juice out of it and learn. And some of these books I read several times. And a lot of these are postgraduate works. And I mention all this not to boast or anything, but just to say that it really was beneficial to me, actually. I learned a lot. And I think if I'd only just come into this world and I was just accessing, I don't know, TikTok or AI, whatever, I wonder if I would have had the time and the space, or even the interest, to really dig very deeply in a way that required a lot of intellectual concentration sustained over a period of months just to take all this on board. Because one of the problems now, and I don't want to go off onto a tangent now at all at the end of this presentation, but it is the information overload, that there is so much information now that it can actually be off-putting, counterproductive, or one thinks that one is learning by skimming the surface on many different subjects. And that, of course, is not a little learning is a dangerous thing, as the cliche goes. And I think there's some truth in that. So I'm just waving the flag there for a time when one did very deep reading of difficult books over a long period of time and over a number of years as well, as a great way to learn things. I'm not saying any of what you said is not valuable as well, but I'm wondering if that other old way of doing it is entirely without merit. I think it has some merit, but who knows?
Yeah, I think so too. And that's what I mentioned in the beginning. Like you had the different eras, you had the oral tradition, you had the when you just have a few books. And you read them many times, it has benefits, but also the new way has benefits too. So trying to use these different methods and ways to approach knowledge, I think it's very important, because I think that we will see soonly young people that don't have any knowledge about Islam will come out with books in 500, 600, 700 pages, many volumes, that can write books that if you look at it, you say, wow, this guy is he's a scholar. but he doesn't know anything. He knows how to use AI. So this is a challenge, because if you would sit down to him and talk to him and he cannot have his AI in front of him, he would not know anything. So we need to combine these kind of the ways of reaching knowledge. Yeah,
I think about combining them is the key, but rather than simply saying old is obsolete and new is better, I think we need to combine the oral and the literary and the various stages that you so helpfully catalogued at the beginning. So that is fantastic. Thank you very much indeed again, Dr. Abdullah Al-Suwaidi, for your time, expertise, and putting all this effort into producing a very accessible introduction and presentation to this fascinating subject. And this is not the end of the story. It's the beginning of the story, or the story continues, of course. So thank you very much. Until next time.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.